WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. We're going to be Conrad's in Perry Hall on Friday. And then, very special, Don's had requests on this. We're doing a vegan crab cake at the Land of Kush on the 18th, Preakness Week. We'll be giving away some Maryland Lottery scratch-offs with Betty Boop. You can have the pink or the blue, whichever one you like, as well as our friends at Goodwill are involved in the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. And now our newest sponsor, Window Nation, as well. Don was my high school guidance counselor, a one-time civics and history social studies professor back in the day in Baltimore County, and went on to principal and superintendenting and all of that stuff. So we do a little education around here, and the words Kerwin come up, and those of us that know the Maryland Terps or whatever, but on the education side, Don, it means something completely different. I know we're going to take a deep dive into education and where all of this money, and our sitting governor sort of fought against this, and we're going to talk a lot about this, but you've gotten the expert of all experts here, Don.
That I don't think there's a better description of our guest than what you just said. The expert of experts. I don't think anyone has been in the public eye fighting for public education and what it should be more and more passionately than our next guest, Buzzy Hettleman. Buzzy was a member of Kerwin, former Baltimore City school board member, former deputy mayor of Baltimore City, and a former Maryland Secretary of Human Resources. Buzzy, you've been at this a long time.
Thank you very much for the kind words. And Don, I know you have been at this for a long time too. Not happily, not as long as I have, but I hope there will be lots more years for both of us.
Now, he said we never had a guest like you on, and I'm thinking, if Nancy hears this, if Nancy grabs me, I'm thinking, we've had her on too, so I just want to be respectful to everybody.
I wouldn't mess with Nancy Grasmick. She was a star superintendent, and she's a star lady.
She set the standard. Well, Buzzy, we literally, and we hope you will become sort of our regular go-to educational commentator. We could talk for hours, but what really sparked me to getting you on this time was a recent op-ed that you wrote, and I thought, holy man, I had Kevin Kamenetz in my ear, I had Jim Smith in my ear. We have been singing this song forever, and no one likes to hear it, and that is, you suggested in a recent piece that school boards have long outlived their usefulness and there's a better way to govern. So with that, we're going to shut up and have you educate our audience as to why that's so.
Well, I think, and bravo to you guys for having the same kind of view. It's not a popular political view. And I'm not sure if you were still in the political thick of things day to day, Don, it'd be something that you or any other candidate wants to bring up because it's so enshrined in our nostalgic thoughts about public education. But think about it. What do volunteer lay people bring to delivering professional education to our kids? There may have been a century ago when you had a rural, one room schoolhouse or something. But math and science, they're not different in Towson than they are in Baltimore, than they are in Rockville. And the way to teach kids to read shouldn't be any different. The only thing that I think school boards as now constituted can do productively is to hire and fire the superintendent. So that raises the question, well, could it be done better? And it seems to me that the chief elected official, be it the county executive or the mayor or the chair of the county council, is better equipped to do that. And you have a better chance of holding the system accountable for results if you can look to the county executive or a mayor, as opposed to looking to seven or nine people, some elected, some appointed, some who are very political, which is not to say that county executives and mayors aren't political, but they are the ones who can best be held accountable. And that's true generally. Now bring this up to today, and school boards are the biggest mess imaginable across the country. School boards are now a wedge issue in national politics and in state politics. We see what's gone on in the Baltimore County School Board and the Prince George's County School Board over the last few years, and it just isn't working. And as I've often said, there's only one thing worse than an appointed school board, and that's an elected one. And elected school boards just geometrically increase the politics and the potential mischief. And we're seeing that across the country today.
Buzzy, you call it mischief. In your op-ed, you said red-hot conservatives are doing most of the damage. Look, I don't, you know, we talk politics here all the time, but and sides that stand for what they stand for when they're lying, when they're being dishonest, I have no problem calling a liar a liar. And in regard to teaching kids basic things about education, to especially the book burning going on in 2022, it's amazing to me that someone wouldn't want to kill a mockingbird taught. That is just an incredible statement. And Don and I talk a lot about To Kill a Mockingbird. It's my wife's favorite book and play and show, and Gregory Peck and all of that. But the bigger issue is we're, you know, almost 80 years out on that. And now we're saying, well, that's not a story we want to tell. That's too dangerous. It's too controversial to talk about true history. And on the right side, to make it an issue for something that none of their constituency even understands at this point. Your thoughts about the politics of this and when this really came in, because I don't think when I was a student of Don's, it was like this that I at all. And Don, you can speak to that as a principal as well.
I want to congratulate you for surviving the instruction and coaching you got from Don.
In spite of him, I have succeeded. Congratulations.
We are having new education wars across the country. And as I said, Republicans in particular are stoking this up for partisan political purposes. And as you know, it goes back to, I'm doing a blank, Northam in Virginia and how he got it started, which is not to say that there haven't been excesses on the left. Critical race theory is a complicated thing. Gender issues are complicated things. But by far, the mischief is by Republicans who want to use this as a wedge issue. And you can see they're playing into it heavily. I mean, you look at the I'm now writing an article on what we should expect in a governor in 22. And you look at the websites of Catherine Schultz and Dan Cox, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about turning the schools over to parents and so forth. So it's a political reality. Democrats have to be smarter. We have to deal with excesses and put forward better possibilities on our own. But it is a national war cry. It's not a dog whistle. It's an out and out war cry that's, you know, it will figure large in the 22 and 24 elections, unless something changes. And, you know, I don't think we have great hopes that the political climate will change.
Buzzy Edelman is our guest here on Baltimore Positive, along with Don Mohler. I just have one follow-up on that, because you mentioned critical race theory, TRT, whatever. Can you define it? I mean, you're a smart guy. You've been at this a long time. What's the beef, as we would say? And I don't think anyone on Fox News even understands what it is or could explain it to me either. I don't know that I've ever asked anybody on this program because we haven't talked much about it. But do even you understand what it is? Could you explain it to a red-blooded American with a red hat or a blue hat or a black parent or a white parent or a suburban parent or an urban parent? What is critical race theory?
Well, I probably can't explain it, but let me try. I think it's the idea, the intent, going back to the New York Times 1619 project, was to make people more aware of the extent to which racism has been a factor throughout our history. And there are still strains of it that are reflected in everyday life and in some of the curricula. But that's a far cry from the, but there have, in the quest to do that, there has been some, I'll use the word, excesses on the left that have sought to make everything racial and to see every educational issue as basically racial in intent, and that isn't accurate. And the best way to deal with the racial issues of blacks and browns is to teach them how to read. And that's not and there aren't racially different ways of doing that.
Well, Buzzy, I want to jump back to the governance issue because you nailed it early on here. You said, Don, it's not politically popular. And I will use the example that my former boss, Kevin Kamenetz, would not get behind a movement to move toward an elected or a hybrid school board in Baltimore County. He was vilified by the education advocates. He was vilified by the League of Women Voters as being anti-democratic. And of course, you knew Kevin and you knew him well. And Kevin said, it's none of that. I'm just telling you that we have been fairly successful in Baltimore County in appointed boards in avoiding the politics of the moment. And the minute you move toward an elected board, you're going to have an infusion of politics that rarely puts children first. Did he end up being prophetic or what? I mean, it's what you write about.
I absolutely. And again, you know, it's only gotten worse. And it's very difficult, as you know, for any elected official to say, well, I don't want community participation and I don't want the voice of the people. And particularly in these days of such dysfunctional of politics. The other thing is I'm a person of the political left, and I support teachers unions as well as other unions. But teachers unions, when you have elected school boards, play an inordinate role. And as much as I support their right to bargain, it's a conflict of interest for members of the school board to be beholden to the teachers. And that's what's happened generally. I really don't know the details as much of Prince George's and Baltimore counties, but across the country, the teachers unions have gotten into this in a big way.
Well, Buzzy, and maybe you can comment on this because I think this is what you allude to in your article. People don't, even to this day, they don't understand, and let me focus on Baltimore County, but you could make it any other subdivision. But in Baltimore County, well over 50% of our operating budget goes to public schools, well over 50%. But it is the area of government that we have absolutely no control over.
I didn't understand that, dude. Even when you were running the county, I was educated in a county. Yeah. County's weird, right? I mean, it really is weird. It's different.
But it's a nationwide thing. That's what Buzzy's saying. That once Kevin used to say, it's like, I'm the bank. I'll write the school system the check, and then they want me to back away. And I always equated, Buzzy, if when I was county executive or chief of staff to county executives, if the director of public works was having trouble getting potholes filled or getting the trash picked up, I would pick up my phone and say, would you come across the street, please? And he would come across the street. We'd have a discussion, and it would either get better or it wouldn't. And if it wouldn't, we would then get a new director of public works. People are shocked that the county executive can't have any kind of input into what a school superintendent is doing when they commit half the budget. It doesn't seem to make any sense, Buzzy.
And it doesn't make any sense. And it's very hard, actually, when you think about it. I sometimes say one of the reasons public education isn't cooking is because there are too many chefs in the kitchen. And when you look, I mean, who is accountable? You got the Congress, you got the president, you got Department of Education, you got the governor, you got MSDE, you got the county executive, you got the school board. It's very hard to sort this all out. But you got to begin somewhere. And at the local level, getting rid of school boards and being able to call up the mayor is a better way to really give people the kind of voice that they want.
Now, a great example, and then I want to shift to Kerwin, because in our limited time, you're the preeminent expert on Kerwin, so we want to touch on that. But let's talk about an issue that everyone across the nation is worried about, and that is the increasing levels of school violence in our schools. And it's not just an urban issue. It spans suburban districts as well. If, like you said, if someone knew where the buck stopped, and whether it's Dutch Rupert's Burger or Jim Smith or Kevin Kamenetz or Don Moore or Johnny O, if people wanted to express a concern about increasing school violence and knew that the county executive was in charge of appointing a superintendent, there would be a tension, and people would hold that county executive accountable. And if we weren't moving in the right direction, I'm thinking we'd get a new county executive, Buzzy.
And not only with respect to education, if you want to deal with the violence program, you should involve the Baltimore County Police Force. And there should be close coordination between the police department and education department, which is harder to get at. The same if you want rec facilities or social services to be closely integrated with the schools. The county executive is better able to do that than a school board can't do it at all.
Right. Well, Buzzy, let's shift real quick. You were there in the beginning of Kerwin. You were on. Nestor loves him some Kerwin Commission, and he doesn't understand, and you've written about, but he'll never understand Hogan's opposition. It's made no sense to us from day one. But let's start at the beginning. Did Kerwin fulfill its promise, Buzzy?
No. And let me say, maybe I should say yes and no. The Kerwin Commission and the blueprint, the blueprint basically incorporates the recommendations of the Kerwin Commission. Did many good things. Increased early childhood services, it raised teacher salaries, gave them more planning and work time. It does good things with career and technology education. It provides wraparound community services for schools with the highest concentrations of poverty. But although almost no one realizes this, and you know some idea of the way the education formulas work, the biggest element is the foundation or base. And that pays for what goes on day to day in schools for all kids. Class sizes, music, art, gym, security officers, nurses, counselors, librarians. That wasn't raised at all. And also, when you don't have an increased foundation, that also costs money for services for kids with special needs. kids who are poor, kids who have disabilities, English language learners. So the real question is, how could the Kerwin Commission and the blueprint leave the biggest part of the school formulas out? And my answer to that is sheer politics. Given that Larry Hogan was the governor and was not going to put up any real money, the legislative leaders basically gave the Kerwin Commission a figure of $4 billion to work with. $4 billion is a lot of money. But if you look at the needs and you look at $4 billion scattered over 13 years, it amounts to only about a 1% annual increase in the state budget. So it's really more, it's not an issue of revenues. I mean, if you had more progressive taxation and you had the political will to do it, doubling that over 13 years, now 12 or 13 years, would not be a big political bite. But Kerwin Commission had $4 billion. I mean, people deny this on the record, but it's true. I mean, where did the $4 billion come from? Nobody can say where it came from. And so, once you see the things that were funded have stronger political constituencies. Everybody's for early childhood education, even though, you know, some person from another planet, everybody's for early childhood education and with good cause. Teacher salaries are going to go up. The unions are the most powerful political player in Annapolis, and they deserve it. Career and technology is a good thing. And wraparound services for schools with the highest concentration of poverty was a favorite of Baltimore City and Maggie McIntosh, who was key head of House Appropriations, and that was her baby. And once you funded those things, there was no money left. And so that's why the base was essentially ignored. And that's why, in my view, Kerwin did not fulfill its full potential. It's good stuff. It's a start. It's significant, but it doesn't get us to where we want to go.
Will it, Buzzy? Man, I love this discussion. So we now have an accountability and implementation board that is charged with making sure the Kerwin investment pays off. If you were advising that board, what would you be telling them to focus on like a laser?
I would tell them to focus on assuring that Mohammed Choudhury, the new state superintendent, has the capacity and is held accountable for running the show. I voted for the Accountability and Implementation Board, but I think almost everyone will say, not on the record, that if we had had a different state superintendent, there wouldn't have been an Accountability and Implementation Board. Whatever Karen Salmon's strengths and commitments were, she did not communicate with anyone. And so there was the feeling that you had to have something above the State Department. The AIB, and, you know, they're good people now, Ike Leggett and Britt Kerwin and so forth. I mean, they're good people. They care. But they are, for all practical purposes, in my view, as long as MSDE does its job, they're a fifth wheel. And I just hope, and I think they do, that they get it, that the idea, they can't do, see, the way the statute is written, they absolutely usurp the powers of the State Department of Education. But that's impossible. They're not limited under the statute to just sort of oversight or reporting. So AIB has to recognize that they need to not try to supersede Choudhury's job, but work with him to see that the work gets done by MSDE.
Well, full disclosure, my daughter is a member of the AIB as a former school psychologist and school principal. And, you know, she was honored to be appointed by the governor to do that and is taking it very, very seriously. You fought in another op-ed, and it's tied to what you're saying about the state superintendent. And by all accounts, this superintendent's getting high marks. Obviously, previous Superintendent Salmon, from my perspective, simply was, you know, at the right hand of Governor Hogan. And whatever Governor Hogan wanted, that's what she did. We saw her interject herself in a way that a superintendent never had in the selection of a local school superintendent in Baltimore County, something that had never, ever happened before, overruling a school board in whom they could appoint. But you fought for this superintendent to have increased resources and staffing, basically saying that he's sort of fighting with his hands tied behind his back. Did that bill pass, and did he get the help you needed?
The bill didn't pass. I haven't had a conversation with him or anyone why it didn't pass, but understand first that there are many strong political interests that don't want the state to be strong. Local school boards, local superintendents, they want to run their own show in their own way. And also the state bureaucracies that handle procurement and personnel, they like to do their thing too. And they don't want agencies to have more discretion. They don't want to diminish their power. And let me say, this leads into, I think, the most maybe important dynamic, and you'll know it well, and that is, quote, local control, end quote. And that really dominates how things get done or don't get done. To me, it's a classic example of how issues are misframed in polarized ways. It's not local control, or it's not state control. It's a balance. And for the balance to work, for the state to have the power, the authority to set high standards, to monitor and make sure there is the money is well spent, they've got to have the capacity. And the locals, I think the locals, if the state knows what it's doing, and if they get the money, then I think the issue won't be as contentious as it sometimes is. And that, to me, is the real hope as to whether Kerwin will work or it won't work. Choudhury has got to work with the locals, and I think he's smart enough to do it. And if he does it well, I don't think we'll have the all-out opposition that is often generated by the Maryland Association of Boards of Education, MABE, and the Superintendents Association. I mean, they didn't want the AIB, and they strongly opposed the AIB, but it was a measure of the dissatisfaction of the General Assembly with Karen Salmon and MSDE that got it through.
Buzzy Heddleman is our guest. Don is here. I just have a follow-up on Kerwin, because we haven't had you on the program before, and I've said and listened to lots and lots of educators discuss this at length. If somebody walks into the elevator and says, got 5 minutes on Kerwin, tell me what this Kerwin thing is, Mr. Heddleman.
Well, it attempts to chart a path that will make Maryland a world-class state for education.
What is a world-class state? Is there a place in the country that we would consider
Nobody's even close. And what the most influential person before the commission was a man named Mark Tucker, who was headed for many years the National Center on Education and the Economy or something like that. And his expertise is in benchmarking other countries. So we were urged to be more like Finland or Ontario or Shanghai or I forget which other countries that rank higher than we do in international assessments. The problem is that countries are different. Tucker was never able to cost out exactly how that would happen. And so we were left without actually a blueprint. And eventually, some of these items that I've mentioned, the preschool, the teacher salaries, the wraparound services, they work their way in, whereas other basic things, as I described them, the day-to-day essentials, were left out because of the money program, because of the politics of the money. The Tucker blueprint never was costed out. And so we're left with, as I say, the cup, is the blueprint cup half full or half empty? It depends on how you look at it. There's good stuff, but to use another metaphor, it's an unfinished symphony.
Buzzy, last question for you, and you've been very gracious with your time. Have you ever, you've written about, you share the frustration. Nestor has verbalized it many, many times on this show about not quite understanding why a governor of a state that's as proud of its educational history as Maryland, why Larry Hogan would have chosen from day one to be an opponent of educational reform and educational excellence. Have you ever spoken directly one-on-one with the governor and engaged him on that topic?
No. The answer is no. And I don't know of anyone else who has or knows, because it doesn't make sense. And the piece I wrote on Hogan flunking as an education governor, you go back, Bill Clinton and George W., they rode to national fame as education governors. And then there was Richard Riley in South Carolina, there was Lamar Alexander in Tennessee. They worked their ways up too. And why he didn't see the potential in that, maybe it was the money, maybe it was just, I don't know. It doesn't make sense. And of course, now with, it's such a hot button issue for Republicans, maybe that's why he not only vetoed the blueprint, but he said, I'm going to continue to fight it all the way.
Fighting education will make him popular on the ballot 24 months from now if Trump's in prison and he sets forth on the path that he wants, which is very clearly the White House. But I don't know how you aspire to the White House and campaign on, I shot down the biggest, most ambitious education program in the history of education programs. Here, vote for me. That might ring popular on the red side.
It would today. As you know, any
issue. It's insane.
And it's sad for the kids. And Maryland, as in all things, has so much potential to be a national leader. We don't have the multiplicity of local governments and school boards. We're relatively wealthy. We're relatively blue. We should be front and center in the country. And I think Hogan hurt us all by not helping to get us there.
Buzzy, as we let you get away, looking forward with your crystal ball, you're going to continue to be an advocate. You're going to continue to push leaders. You're going to continue to write. Where are you on a hopeful meter of 1 to 10 in terms of whether or not we can be a successful nation in public education, with zero being we're not going to get there, and 10, you're pretty hopeful. Where are you on the hopeful meter?
4 or 5 at best. First, nationally, you know, this country is a basket case. We can't get people to agree on what a democracy is. And at the and in fairness to politicians and school boards and everybody else, education is a hard thing. And we don't know, you know, another long subject for another day is the fair question of what schools can do by themselves if we don't strengthen families and jobs and police protection and drugs and all that sort of thing. Saying that, we can do a hell of a lot better. So that's no, it's not an acceptable excuse. But we're not sure. In other words, there's no state in the country, even Massachusetts, which is touted all the time, where more than half the kids are achieving where they should in terms of basic learning skills. So we have a long way to go. We can do better. Maryland should lead the way. But I can't give it more than a 4 or 5 or 3.
Nestor, school.
You're too school young to be cynical, Buzzy. Come on now.
School has been in session, Nestor, and the first of what I hope will be many, many visits from a preeminent educational expert in the nation.
We will reach back to you as Kerwin unfolds and as elections unfold. And we have a new governor, one side of the aisle or the other. Buzzy Edelman, appreciation for a time well spent here. As we say, we call them wise conversations, and that's what they are. He is former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. I am Nestor, and we are WNSD, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.